Hello, and welcome to the Art of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane, and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop, and trust your intuition through interviews with other guests and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello again, and welcome to the Art of Intuition podcast. Whoops, that's meant to be the Voice of Intuition podcast. I'm still getting used to this change. Anyway, welcome on board. My name is Susan Jane, and I am your host for this podcast. So remember to subscribe and like and share the podcast to everyone, or the show, because it's now a TV, what do they call it? A web TV show. So it's on YouTube, basically, and it's on every week. So this week, I'm really excited. I had an interview with this gentleman. Wait until we hear his voice. It's gorgeous. Dr. Mark Weissman. Now, he is a, I have to keep reading his, I cannot pronounce any of the stuff. He's going to do that. But he is a Celtic Norse shaman, but a doctor as well. So it's really, he's really interesting. But again, you're going to love his voice. So I'm not going to do a lot of talking this time. Don't tell him that. He's going to do all the work. But I want to welcome to the show, Dr. Mark Weissman. How are you, Dr. Mark?
How are you? Thank you for that invite. And thank you for that intro. Absolutely.
It wasn't real good because I didn't want to go through all the details. I want you to do that so people can get an understanding of who you are, but more so they can hear your voice because I love it.
all my friends do too, so it's all good.
Yeah, okay. You got to tell us all about you then. How did you get to where you are now?
Well, that's a very long journey, honestly. Started very young when I was introduced to the metaphysical world. I traveled a very destructive path following the passing of my father. That destructive path led me to find the beautiful, most beautiful woman in the world for me, whom I met and married. And we've now been married for 31 years. She brought stability and understanding that I didn't have at that point. I had a lot of voices that I heard in my head, and it was very confusing. I was a very long journey, very painful journey that led me to ultimately become ordained in the Christian church, where I became a chaplain with the Christian church, but something was still missing, and I struggled for many years. At that point, I had started working with returning veterans who were returning from combat assignments, and so as we began down the rabbit hole of guilt and shame and all of the things associated with war, some things happened that kind of led me to think about my ancestry. And one of the things that came of that was an understanding of where I came from and the parts that made me who I am and my understanding. And as I further and further embraced my cultural heritage, if you will, those lessons then led to a spiritual understanding that would eventually fill me in ways that I just couldn't get there with some of the mainstream practices, particularly in Christianity. And so I led off of Christianity for about probably almost a decade following the spiritual guides and my spiritual feelings and whatnot. And that led me to a vision I had in 2020, where Odin appeared to me, and I made a blood oath to Odin to support and to educate and to inform. And so since that day to now, why I've been helping people, whether they've been in combat or not, to experience a better life by being able to understand the spiritual influences of their lives so that they can ultimately direct the show and get themselves happy.
Wow. That's a big journey. The first thing, of course, that springs to mind is Odin. Who, what, why, where, like I have heard, I am semi-aware, but I really don't understand who, what Odin is. You've got to explain that one.
I absolutely can. Odin was the supreme god of the Assyrians, and he comes from a very long line of beliefs, particularly through the Germanic tribes of pre-Christian Europe, where he actually originated as the Celts migrated across what is today Germany, and he would become Wotan in the Germanic tribes. That spiritual beliefs and that spiritual understanding led to the Old Norse name of Odin, and Odin would become the supreme god. He was the god of war. He was the god of negotiations. He kind of became more or less the lead god of the Aesirs, and led all the battles, quite popular. And he kind of survived in the Norse pantheon anyway. He survives today as being the husband of Frigg. Again, kind of that all-seeing, commonly referred to as the All-Father. He is the supreme god.
Wow. Okay. Hang on. Oops. I meant to be going back into here. I meant to be on as well when I'm talking. Right. Okay. So, and when with sort of that era, because I'm not really good with the religion and different things like that, but I've got this understanding that different areas seem to have had their different gods or speakers have got from God, you know. So we had right. like Jesus, we in that area and that time. We've had Buddha, we've had Moses, we've had these different areas that have had these big followings, these big areas. And I sort of start to think, well, hang on, that sort of starts to make a lot more sense if you've got God as in the big almighty, but you need to have maybe that connecting area to general humans, if that makes sense. Right. Yeah. Right. And I can see a lot of these people that have walked the earth that have become these connections between the two. It's really quite amazing. So when was Odin, like when was that era? Because we're talking about ancestors, we're talking about history. When was that era? Like what BC or AD or whatever we call it?
Yes, the current geological epoch is what I refer to it as, which is the scientific term that says zero and above. And so
okay.
that's kind of from a numbering sequence. We really see right around the turn of the geological epoch, a lot of migration going on in Europe at the time. A lot of major tribes were on the move. They were recollecting and repopulating other areas. So we find a lot of the migration there right around that geological epoch. And really, by the time you see the fall of the Roman Empire in Europe, 300, 400 current era, you're going to see a lot of these groups come to be. And so the stories of Odin, particularly there is some social talk, if you will, about where he had been a Greek warrior who decided to go north at some point. And so traveled across Germania, of which in Germania, he was referred to as Wooten. Again, the local language and what you say about the local regional culture, how that applied to him. And so we see that in the Wooten, as he moves north of the Elbe River, which is in northern Germany, north of the Elbe River, then quickly steps into what we know today as Denmark. And by then, we're finding the language of the local, the regional area there was Old Norse, which had come down from Norway, those areas. And that Old Norse then translated Wooten into Odin. And so the birth of the pantheon that we know to be Norse mythology began kind of at that point. So we're talking, I want to put it right around 400 to 500 current era. And then we really see a whole lot of physical evidence by the time the Vikings come into power, or the age of Vikings really starts up at about 700, kind of goes all the way to 1,000. And so by then, Odin is kind of almost on every table. So he's well entrenched in that culture there in Scandinavia, traveling as far north as the north of Sweden, far south as still remaining in the Germanic tribes, but yet in the Germanic tribes, he's known as Wooten. And so kind of the same effect. So that's the regional, kind of the cultural effect we see with that.
Yeah, and that's what made it so big, wasn't it? Because it was such a big area. And like you're saying, it's that particular time when they're all starting to move, everything's starting to spread and travel further afield. So we were all picking up different cultures, all going different ways. So how did you get to the understanding? Like, how did you follow back your lineage? You know, did you do a DNA test? Did you, like, how did you go there? Sorry, I'm talking too much.
No, not at all. And you're exactly right. I started obviously with the communications with my parent, or my alive, siblings and cousins and whatnot. And that begat, of course, questions as to where we come from. You know, from my father back to his father, back to his father, and so on and so forth. And so I did do the genealogy research study kind of in parallel with my theological studies, if you will, my spiritual studies. So they were kind of running in parallel. And so on my genealogy, as I've gone back now, I think I have a genealogical record that extends to the mid-1400s. At that point, I then began to channel, which is where a spiritual entity can communicate through me out to the world. In my case, it took the form of writing and then speaking. And so, in that realm, we got all the way back. Him and I have had many conversations that have led me back to right then about 400, which is where we see the Roman Empire really collapsing there in the West, kind of folding back in, headed for back to Rome. And we really see the Celtic and some of the other, the Visigoth and the Franks, And all of these other cultures then begin to kind of really settle Europe and essentially evict the Romans. So you could say it was my genealogical studies, my spiritual studies, and a history lesson, kind of all bundled in a matter of two decades to kind of bring around this idea of thought.
Yeah, because it isn't, you can't just go down one path, can you? You can't just go down that's the path and we're just going to follow that and, you know, so be it. But no, there's so many paths and so many variables to it all. I talked to you when I spoke to you last time. I was telling you that I'm heading over to the UK at the end of this year with my father, who's 92. So that's going to be fun. He's going to show me around because I am the only sibling in my family who hasn't gone back to England. I was born in England, who hasn't gone back there as an adult. So I'm really looking forward to it. And he loves the history side of it. But I was telling you that one of my relatives, and I can't remember which one it was, I think it was one of my aunties, followed our history back. And they got it right back to a tribe called the Iceni tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and there's some other areas really big in that side of it. So that's another area I want to look at. And one of my cousins, he is right into all of that. He actually does tours of Stonehenge and all that
wonderful
area there. So I'm really looking forward to that. So, and I really don't know why I had to say that, but I just wanted to share.
No, that's wonderful. Well, right. One of the things that you will find, I think, when you go back is there's so much history and so much connection with that history. And I think, you know, one of the podcasts, matter of fact, that's coming out this weekend is where I will discuss kind of the connection between your culture and your spiritual self and how that culture, I think, a lot of people say, oh, well, my culture, all it does is give me recipes for family dinners. And maybe if you're like me, you get a really cool, I have a fairly large lineage in Ireland. And so I get a nice plaid to make a kilt out of. But there's so much more that's handed down through one's culture that one just doesn't, many people do not just immediately associate and think, oh, okay, well, that's neither here nor there, but it's so critical to, I think, our spiritual well-being and our spiritual centering.
Yes, yeah, I agree. It's and there is a lot to it. We actually just take it for granted. We don't even realize. Yeah, yeah, we just take it on board and that's what you do. And the other thing too, Mark, is because I am in Australia and I, you know, came to Australia when I was 2.5, Australia doesn't have we have culture, obviously, and we have a strange accent, but we don't have as much history. And any history that we've got, like our history is really only a couple of hundred years old. So any that we got, we sort of try and hold on to. But in the UK, the history is just so vast. And it's just, yeah, that's the part I sort of really, really want to look at and really enjoy. And like you say, get that understanding and get the knowledge behind that culture and why we're like that. And often we get to the stage where we sort of go, well, that's just how it is. And we get so involved in what we're doing and how we are and what we forget that other people have their cultures and other people have their ways of being. Yeah. But what I wanted to talk about, because you talk about the psychological trauma and building coping mechanisms. So how is going back into the history, how is understanding our culture, what's the next step with that as far as helping us out in the here and now?
Well, that's a great question. And it, the way I use my ancient teachings and my ancient understanding to help people, particularly with trauma, is one of the things that we have to remember about those people in the past that almost is a forgotten art at this point, and that was living congruently, in that our minds and our hearts were always in line, regardless what we were doing, whether it was tilling the fields, whether it was in combat, whether it was, you know, making generations, whatever it was, we were congruent. We were living what we believed. And this I believe, was really fed by the culture of that regional area. And so a lot of it was just kind of, it was expected. Whereas today, I think that's where a lot of people struggle, is that they can't be congruent. They have feelings, or they think they have feelings, and those just don't translate into a social order that works for them. And so one of the things that I focus with people who come to me is we talk about clearing the mind and obtaining kind of that central simplicity. Throw away all that complexity and all the drama that unfortunately is usually attached to complexity, and begin to understand, you know, a congruence. Who are you at your center? And then from there, we build a model, or we build, you know, a structure for you that can help you to say, I'm bigger than that. And I don't need that behavior, or I don't need that belief. But we have to understand where we are and why we believe what we believe. We can kick those things to the curb and then begin to live more congruently with what we're feeling, what our heart is telling us we should be doing. And so that's really kind of a Celtic mentality to life, was really being congruent. Your heart and your minds were always connected. And when they weren't, you would find illnesses or certainly mental disease. But that was the big thing, is getting that in line. And so that's kind of some of the things I do to help the people that I work with every day.
Right. Okay. So yeah, so you're doing it that way. I really liked how you explained that, how you sort of said it's going back to the simplicity of it. So understanding that history is understanding that everything we've built on, like when we're going right back to there, we had like the mud huts, or we had basic tools. We, you know, so our life was involved around survival in that sort of physical context, and then all around the spiritual side of the community and how we're interacting and that side. Whereas now we've sort of gone really individualized, and this is me and this is what I'm doing, and it's not so community minded in a lot of sense. And yet we still have a lot of people that are very, very community minded. I'm not saying we're all the same, but when we're attaching ourselves to this is the technical term, the crap that's going on, that's the technical term. when we're attaching ourselves to that and we're living that, we're not living our true selves, are we? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's right. We're getting drawn away into that other stuff. We're forgetting of who we are and what we want. What do we, you know, one of the things that I talk about in a previous show is understanding our value. A lot of people say, oh, I want a big house. Okay. Why do you want a big house? I want a big house so that, you know, my family and my friends can live with me, and we're all under one roof and we're all together. Okay. Well, why do you want that? I don't know. Well, I do know. I do know. You want it for security. So the house really isn't as important. Your friends are semi-important, but the security and the safety of a home with people around you, particularly people around you who care, that's important to you. That's the value. Not the house, not the money, not the all the other things, but the value is security and safety. And so you got to kind of move all that chattel, for lack of a better word, out of the way. And so so that you can get to this core values of who you are. And that way, it becomes so much easier to live congruently when it's more of a, this is really what I want. So it's easier to align the brain and the heart when you know what the heart is seeing.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you don't know who you are and what you're doing or where you want to go, you got nowhere to go, or yeah, exactly. And having an understanding of that history behind it, our culture behind it, our history, and not just the culture in now, but the culture that we've come through, you know, the families, the past, you know, all your DNA, right. All that stuff that's coming through then, having an understanding of that. I know when I was doing a lot of my learnings, my spiritual learnings, as you called them, I remember learning about me, getting an understanding of who I was. I could go into a shop and I'd need a new top or something, and somebody, my girlfriend, would come with me and she'd say, which one do you like? And I'd go, I don't know. Now, how do you not know what you like and what you don't like? And because of my living environment and what I'd been through in my time, through my marriage and everything else, I wasn't allowed to have an opinion. So I didn't know. So it took me a long time to get an understanding of who I was. What did I like? Okay, I like that. Oh, but what if Billy Bob down the road doesn't like it? It doesn't matter. If I
Billy
like
Bob
it,
down the road's not wearing it. I am.
Exactly. But you did. I didn't. That way, that was my mindset. I had to change. I had to change. What if someone doesn't like it? I had to change that and go, doesn't matter. If I like it, then I wear it, you know. So These are, like you say, these are the sort of things that we need to do. We need to know who we are. And getting an understanding of our history and our culture in that term is really, really important, because that's such a big part of us.
But I also think you brought up a very, very powerful point there when you were talking about a frame of mind that we have to change. One of the things that I think a lot of people get confused by, and I'll use that word, confused, is that they don't feel that they have the power to do that. They think they need someone else to give them that power. You know, a lot of people come to a shaman and they say, shaman, do this. Why? Why am I doing it? Why don't you do it? You're just as powerful as I am.
Yes.
If not more so. You have youth and energy, and my youth left me many years ago. But my point is, what many people forget is that they have the power to make these changes in their lives. And they so badly want to hang it on someone else's collar and say, you do this for me. No, mm-hmm. You have the power. You make the decision and you live the decision.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I learned so strongly, and that's where I really, really connected with my intuition, is because when I wanted to make a decision, I got to the stage where I could ask other people, what was your ideas? But the reality was I had to ask myself, and I had to get the message and the understanding, because the decision I was going to make, I had to live with that decision, not anyone else.
Right.
And so it needed to resonate with me, because I'd often made decisions because, you know, Billy said, do this, or Georgie said, do that. And I've made those decisions and I've had to live with them. And it's like, well, you can turn around and say, well, you know, mum made me do it, or, you know, dad made me do it. No, you still make those decisions.
You did it.
You live with it. Yeah, absolutely. And we can. And one of the other things too, Mark, is when I do, because I do the flower readings like I've spoken to you about, but my biggest goal is not doing the flower readings to give everyone else an understanding. My biggest goal is to teach people, or for them to learn how to do it themselves, to empower them. And I agree with you. When people do come to you, it's really you want to help them, but in the same token, you know they can do it themselves. So what's one of the little tricks that we can start with where they can start to help themselves?
You know, my advice to everyone, and you know, for those of your listeners who want to join me every day on the Wisdom app, I do about 20 minutes, and we talk about all the kinds of we typically talk about the show we had the previous Sunday, and I kind of drill down in it a little bit. But one of the things that I constantly bring up in that show and I constantly talk about is getting a mindfulness so that you can start, you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
And the place that you need to start is you need to know where you are today. And you can do that very, very easily. And I say easily, I mean, as there's no cost or we don't have to climb the mountaintop of redemption. We can do it just sitting on our couch. And we simply take a moment where we shut off our physical centers. So we just, you know, and I know it's a little hard sometimes to shut off the old ears, but we can do it, earmuffs, and close our eyes and focus on our own mind. Focus on what we think. And then, you know, and the book, which I have coming out later this year, the book actually has exercises at the end. Some exercises to help people do exactly what we're talking about here. But what we do is we take, once we have that clear mind, and we kind of put all the noise aside, and we can focus on a dark moment, just get our mind straight, we can start asking ourselves questions. And questions like, what do I really want? What is important to me? And we begin to make notes of these things. And it's really, really critical that we know who we are for us to go forward with other people, with life, with happiness. In particular, you know, when we start talking about harmony, how can you harmonize when you don't even know what tune you're carrying? It's very challenging, right? So we need to know where we are. And we always say it, and you'll hear it in spiritual centers around the world where they talk about, you know, you sing or do whatever. And no. You need to take a deep dive into you. Yes. You need to understand your values. And when I mean values, that's not a new car. What is a new car? Well, a new car means I can show off to other people, or it means I can go to work. Okay, well, why do you have to go to work? Well, I go to work to pay my bills. Okay, why do you pay your bills? I pay my bills because I like the security of living somewhere. Now we're at a value level. Yeah. So drilling it back, getting away from our perception, our societal perception of what we want versus what we actually value. And once we have that kind of in our mind, then we can start asking bigger questions, right? You know, and this is going to take time. I'm not going to say it's all going to occur to you overnight. It's probably not. But once you get through your values and you can understand what your internal values are, then you turn those values on your beliefs. Why do you believe this? Well, I believe that because it provides for this value. And so you start playing, you know, pin the tail on the donkey, so to speak, of pinning these beliefs on your values. And when there's incongruence between those two, that's where you've really got to say, well, wait a minute, why do I believe that then?
Yes.
Well, because my mother told me, my father told me, my pastor told me, someone told me along the way whom I value, right? So we got our friends in that value bucket, right? And so one of my friends told me this. Well, okay, but that doesn't align with what I believe. Okay, I believe something else. So why am I saying this? Why am I believing this? Okay, I don't know. I have to investigate that. And every person will be different in that journey. That's the journey of discovery, right? And that's where we really begin to free ourselves from these shackles of negativity and incongruence, which is where things just come apart in our lives.
Yeah. What I really liked about that, Mark, is the fact that when you're doing that, like, you've just gone and done an example, right? But you have been doing this for a lot of people for a long time. So when they say, I want a new car, you know what to ask them to get to their values, or you know what to say. So when someone's doing this on their own, they're going to have a little bit more trouble. And this is where someone like Mark, and I don't think your class is a life coach, are you? But you do that sort of thing. You're very supportive in that terminology. But it's having someone like you to bounce those ideas off that help you get to your core value or to your values a lot quicker and a lot smoother. And I only wanted to bring this up because a lot of people sort of go, well, what do life coaches do, or what do people do? You've just explained exactly how you work, because I could be sitting there in a meditation going, oh, I want a big house. Why do you want a big house? Because it looks good, you know, and not go any further because I don't have the understanding of how to go further. But well,
I was just going to say, and to add to your description, which you were doing a wonderful job, I wanted to say that, you know, it's no surprise for those of us who have lived a while that one of the first words a young child will repetitively ask you is the same question you should ask yourself every day for everything in your life. It's a one-word question.
Yes.
Why?
Absolutely.
If you can answer why with a straight face, I guess it's the red face test, right? So if you can answer the why, oh, I believe that. Why? Because it applies to my values over here or over there. If you can answer the why, then chances are you have something at which you can now store in your library and say, okay, let's keep her.
Yes. One of the other areas with the why, especially when people are learning to do this, is you've got to ask the why at least three times. Is that correct? I've heard that before, where you've got to say, okay, I want a big car. I want a new car. Why? And you have to answer that. You answer that question, because mine's broken. Why? Oh, because I haven't maintained it. Why? Yeah, or, you know, you have to keep on going with the whys until you get a result that you want, or you.
Well, I think kind of right along your lines, right along there, is once you reach a point in your discussion with yourself where there isn't anything else, right?
Yes.
You've reached the value of having that car or having that house or having lots of money, whatever it is that you're saying you want. As you go through the whys and you come all the way back to that place where you go, oh, well, why do I want that? I don't know. I don't know why I value security. I don't know why I love this or that. I don't know. And so you, of course, you know, obviously you want to keep digging, but I think, you know, in all intents and purposes, particularly in many of the settings I've been in, when we get to that point, we've identified, I think, at least, you know, a first, second, or third level value that we can't break it down any further, right? You know, it goes back and you go, Well, yeah, I suppose if you wanted to, you could say, I want security because I didn't have any when I was a kid. You know, my families were gypsies or whatever, right? So you could always cut things down further. But once you reach, I think in all the cases that I've worked in, when you get to those values, even if it's first, second, or third layer values, when you get to that point, you will see that it's like all of a sudden things start changing in your world. I mean, it just like all of a sudden things start making sense and you can connect different things. And it's like, oh, now I understand. And so that's, I think you're reaching levels of clarity at that point.
Yeah. So in other words, you can do it yourself and there's no worries about that. It may take, like with my learnings, and I'm sure with your learnings, it may take a lot longer when you're doing it on your own. When you're doing it with somebody, it can be a bit quicker because we can sort of cut to the chase. But what I want to talk about, because we're starting to get low on time, and I've got it on the ticker tape down the bottom, is your book. Now, I know it's not coming out for a little while yet. It's due out at the end of the year, but they can get it on your website, and the website will be in the details underneath in the description. But what the book is called, The Turn to Final. How did you get that? What is it about? Come on, tell us a little bit more.
Okay. The Turn to Final is a gift. It was, most of the book was channeled to me. And so I was able to write it down as fast as I could. And so it's essentially, the book is a interactivity between spirituality and psychology, with the science to understand both. So I scientifically explain how spirituality affects our everyday psychology, even for those who do not believe. So that's kind of what the book is. I call it my triad. But The Turn to Final, for anyone who is versed in aircraft speak, The Turn to Final is the last part of a flight where an aircraft makes its final turn on approach to a runway where you're about to land. And in the reason I chose that title, and I will fiercely defend it, is that the book provides, I hope, understandings on how people can come out of the air, up in the air, right? We're confused, or we may be just misunderstanding, a little lost in life, making our turn to final to put the wheels on the ground and actually get back and grounded and understand the influence that we have in our lives that make us think the way we do. So that's why the title was chosen. Yes.
Oh, I love that. And so in it, it's got, you said it had some examples. You said you had
mindful exercises.
That's it. Yes. Sorry.
Yes. No, that's wonderful. The book actually goes through and it talks, it's actually 7 chapters, and you can actually see the outline on our webpage. You can go and you can click on the little icon and it'll show you the first, I think it's the intro and some of the table of contents. But ultimately the book, it talks about kind of the evolution of the human being and how, as a physiological being, we've come to where we are via evolution and cognitive thought. And it takes a lot of different theories and kind of crams them all together to make logical sense. So it evolves. Hopefully the reader can follow along with both the evolution as a physical being that migrated out of Africa 196,000 years ago to the modern day. And then it talks about the development of psychology and kind of how psychology came to be and the evolution of psychologies. So we understand the physical being, we understand the whole reality at the physical being that we are. And then it goes into spirituality, and it speaks a lot about spirituality from a very granular, very scientific perspective. And it kind of looks at scientific quantum physics. It uses quite a bit in layman's terms, so don't think you need a physics degree to read it. and it kind of talks about why spirituality works the way it does. And so it then goes on to talk a little bit about spells and prayer and how they're the same thing. Talks about the energy used in that and kind of talks about that. And then it finally kind of talks about at the end is the cultural piece that speaks to some of the things that have been, I don't know if lost, but certainly degraded in value throughout the millennia, of ways, things that we can implement into our lives that that will bring us back in congruence, and we will begin to feel happier, healthier, more full, more energetic lives. So that's kind of, and then it kind of finishes off the book and talks about some mindful exercises, how to start. One of the things that, and I've made lots of jokes over the years about it, is when I first started meditating, many, many moons ago, and I'd sit and I'd meditate, I felt like an idiot. I really did. It's like, oh, I was waiting for a lightning bolt or something to you know, something I could physically, you know, put my hands on and say, oh, look, this happened because I was meditating. And what I was doing is I was looking surfacely at my situation. I wasn't doing the exercise part of meditation, and that was to turn intrinsically and to look at what was inside and what was I feeling, and when I felt something, what was I thinking I felt versus what was I actually feeling. And I didn't start, I really didn't come to that realization until a couple of years later, you know, and I diligently struggled through the first part of my meditation. And so another message, obviously, for listeners who say, okay, I know I got to do meditation, but I feel so silly doing it. And I'm here to say, anyone who has ever done meditation and now does it religiously, no pun intended, we felt silly at the beginning.
Yes.
We felt silly, and we didn't understand the full portion of meditation, and that was to turn intrinsic and start looking inside. We were too busy waiting for the lightning bolt, right? Or what is the Greek messenger, Hermes?
Yes.
We were waiting for him to show up with a message, right? And say, oh, here you go. And it's like, no, that's not going to happen. What's going to happen is as you meditate, the more and more that you're able to clear your mind and get that aura nice and clear, now the communications begin to really flow between you and your ancestors, between you and your deities, between you and other spiritual entities, you and even other friends on this plane whose aura is out looking for you. You're going to find that connection. And so those things happen as we're able to clear that mind and get more congruency within our lives. And so that's one of the big things I think of meditation. But again, it doesn't happen the first time. We sit down, we close our eyes. Maybe for some people, they may assume some pose, and it's like, yeah, no, that doesn't work for me. But again, every person's different. And yes, you're going to feel silly. Yes, that's acceptable. And you will learn and you will grow. And I can guarantee, as sure as I draw the next breath, that eventually you will start seeing, as you turn more intrinsically, you're going to see a whole lot of value in these mindful exercises to help yourself clear the mind of junk, for lack of a better word. Or as you put it, what is the technical term? Oh, crap. Yes. So we get that crap out of the way. and so that we can then focus and clear that aura and begin to really learn and experience a full life.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Mark. We are running out of time, so we have to close it off. But I do want to say one thing too about that meditation. I remember I had to do it. I did it with my life coaching course. That was before before Anthony Robbins changed his name to Tony Robbins. So that's how long ago that was. But I had to do it. So I remember by about the fifth day, I just got to the stage where I went, well, I've got to do this. So just succumb to it. Just do it. And so my attitude was like, okay, I'm going to sit here for 10 minutes every day and it doesn't matter what happens. And as soon as I succumb to it, yeah, it started to happen. So, yes, you do feel a bit silly, but do it. But anyway, one more last little thing before you go, because we do really have to close off.
I just want to tell you and your listeners that it is a wonderful thing when we can take all of our perspectives and put them together into a beautiful blend and weave the blanket of commonality amongst us to then see a brighter future for us and for our descendants, that they may live free of all this hassle that we've had to endure, and hopefully they can be happy and healthy.
That was lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you for being on the show. I do have to close it off now. Sorry, don't mean to be rude, but thanks, guys. What, you know what Mark said just at the end there, and that sort of really, really sat lovely with me, because although we're talking about history and our ancestors and everything else, what he just said then was all about our, we're making the history. We are the ancestors for those that we give birth to, and for our children, our great-grandchildren, all the rest of it. So if we do the work now, it is going to make it easier for those that go that come after us. And I really love that. That's such a lovely way to finish this show. But share, like, subscribe. This is The Voice of Intuition. I am Susan Jane. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great week, and we will see you next week. Bye for now.